The man who sends the investor class diving for their tax shelters. Rick Smith.
The rich pay too much taxes. The poor get way too much. Instead of schools, build prisons and lock the children up. We won't believe those lies again, because God is a Republican.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, ricksmithshow.com. So a story yesterday at CNN caught my attention. It's another one of these moments where you look at these incestuous ties, this pool between right-wing extremism and extreme religiosity. And the CNN reports that a West Virginia man who is a former contractor in Iraq proposed setting up a meeting with Russians and the Trump campaign last year to discuss their, quote, shared Christian values, raising new questions for investigators to explore as part of their Russia inquiry. And it turns out, and look, you know, I've often wondered, you see at 3 o'clock in the morning, Pat Boone out there saying, hey, we need to get a whole bunch of money so we can get the Russian Jews back. And we can, and you go, explain. And you look at these networks that are being built in the name of Christianity, and it's scary stuff. And here to talk a little bit, share his thoughts, is Christopher Stroop. He is, in my view, one of the experts on this topic, a writer, ex-evangelical, and a PhD in Russian, modern Russian history. Chris, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me back on, Rick. It's always great to be on your show.
So am I right to be kind of freaked out when I see this statement that there was a proposed meeting to discuss the shared Christian values between the Russians and the Trump campaign?
Sure. I think that's definitely concerning. You know, even though in this case the meeting didn't happen, we do know that there are these massive right-wing networks, a lot of connections, a lot of ties, and that Russia under Putin has rebranded itself as the standard bearer for traditional values in the world. And a lot of our right-wing Christian conservatives have rallied around Putin. You know, Brian Fisher of the American Family Association, for example, has called him a lion of Christianity. And the other day, I think it was August 20th, he tweeted that the FBI is more likely guilty of collusion with Russia than Trump, which is just kind of hilarious, you know. So these guys who praise Russia engage in a lot of deflection, and they propagate the Kremlin's talking points on social media and elsewhere.
Now, just to highlight this, maybe I'm wrong, but Putin was a high KGB official, right?
No, I mean, you're right. He was an important KGB official.
And somehow that, and what we know the KGB has done, somehow those are Christian values?
Well, I'll tell you what I think Putin values besides wealth and power, and I think that is Russian greatness. I think that while his understanding of patriotism is toxic and hyper-masculine, I think he is a Russian patriot. And interestingly enough, you know, in the late Soviet years, there were not many true believers, not many true Leninists left. There was an increasing ideological vacuum. And among Soviet dissidents at that time, it started to be filled with Christianity. There were a lot of Russian religious philosophers, intellectuals, people that I've studied, who were being passed around in samizdat, which, of course, was the underground self-printed literature that dissidents spread in the Soviet Union. And so once the Soviet Union actually fell apart, the church became much more powerful again, closer to the state. That's really come to a head. It's sort of increased in Putin's third term, in as much as he has cozied up even more to the church. But even in Soviet times, the church, such as it was allowed to exist, and it was treated much better from the time of World War II, when Stalin made a rapprochement with the church, the Russian Orthodox Church, in exchange for it praying for Soviet victory against the Nazis. The church's top clerics who have participated in international bodies, like the World Council of Churches, were also working for the KGB, reporting to the KGB or KGB agents themselves. And that's true of the former Patriarch Alexei, that's true of Patriarch Kirill. So there's this bizarre, cynical background that we're looking at. And now, as Putinism is trying to define itself as an ideology to replace Soviet Marxism, what you sort of have is this neo-imperial religious ideal. That's the kind of image that Putin is projecting of himself as a defender of traditional values, and many people on our right are eating it up.
Now, I got to be honest, you know, I had never thought in my lifetime that I would see someone in this country side with a Russian leader over you know, many in our own country, but yet we're in this really bizarre moment, aren't we?
We are, and it's very telling of what the Christian right really has always been, because during the Cold War, what allowed them to come into the mainstream was their anti-communism. And I think we all kind of tended to assume that people who are opposed to communism are for freedom. Turns out that's not actually the case, and really we could have known this all along if we'd been paying attention. If you look at the kinds of people who were lionized by hardline right-wingers, conservatives, including Christian conservatives, during the Cold War, you know, people like Alexander Solzhenitsyn, who for his exposure of the gulags, of course, that was a heroic thing that we should admire, but Solzhenitsyn never made a secret of the fact that he was quite reactionary in his political views. He talked a lot about the decline of the West, and though he was expelled from the Soviet Union, after the Soviet Union collapsed and as Putin consolidated power, he received Russian citizenship again. He moved back to Russia. He died a Putin supporter. So it's not authoritarianism that our Christian right has been opposed to. It's godlessness, as they see it. And that's why they actually see secular democracy of the type that we have attempted to build when we're being our best selves here in America. They see it as godless and essentially as equivalent to the Soviet Union, whereas they look to someone like Putin enforcing religious ideal, particularly with his persecution of the LGBTQ community and projecting this hyper-masculine image, and they say, great, we can sign up for that. We can sign up for Christian authoritarians.
Which would you know, kind of give a rationale for how Trump rose to power, even with all of his flaws, you know, grab her by the you-know-what and all of the womanizing and the multiple divorces and all of the, well, I would argue, anti-Christian behavior. It's how, sure. must be how they're able to put all of that aside then.
Yeah, absolutely, because Trump is doing what they want. He's pursuing their agenda. He stole one Supreme Court seat for them. I mean, well, I guess you could say Mitch McConnell helped a lot. The Republicans in general are responsible for that, but Trump filled it with somebody who is clearly going to rule against Roe v. Wade if it comes up, presumably against to overturn Obergefell as well. So, yeah, he is listening to the Christian right. They either explain away his bad behavior with, well, he's a baby Christian, or they say, well, we understand very well he's not one of us and he's flawed, but God raised him up anyway to pursue our agenda, you know.
Yeah, and that frame that you just said there, and you, real quick, I can't tell you how many different emails I got from, you know, these chains of saying that same kind of rhetoric. You know, he's not perfect, he's flawed, you know, he's not really one of us, but God sent him, and he will do our work, and that's why we need to support him. And I remember reading this stuff going, really? Is this how modern-day Christianity now works? And the answer, I guess, is sadly, yes.
I mean, it's, of course, you know, hashtag not all Christians, right? But certainly the Christian right has a lot of power. It's a dangerous anti-democratic force. And I don't think we can dismiss it as fake Christianity. I don't think that's helpful. Because if you want to look into the history of Christianity, it's sets of beliefs, norms, practices, different kinds of Christian communities, the texts themselves, the Bible, as well as theological writings. There are a lot of resources in this complex Christian discourse that can support social justice, but there are also a lot of resources in this Christian discourse and in Christian history that can support authoritarianism and Christian imperialism. So it's a complex legacy. Could use a term that was coined by the anthropologist Clifford Geertz. A religion is a cultural system. And, you know, there are always going to be internal fissures in any kind of cultural system, and there's going to be contention about what true Christianity is. If we're looking at it from the outside as a kind of scholarly observer, we can't adjudicate between competing versions of what Christianity is as long as they do show this record of practice, norms, beliefs in relation to the scripture, in relation to the tradition. You know, so Trump himself, I'd call a fake Christian, you know, because he's obviously faking piety to the extent that he does. But the Christians who support him, they are Christians. Christianity has to own its shadow side. Yeah, now, that shadow side is ascendant.
Yeah, I mean, I've always said that, you know, once we finally stick the flag in the ground, say we're a Christian nation, that's when the real fun begins, as all of these extreme sects begin to eat each other simply so that they can be the dominant Christian sect in a Christian nation.
Well, you know, what has worked so well for them so far, and you know, I guess we can question how well it would continue, but I don't see them necessarily eating each other because it is working, is to form increasingly broad conservative religious coalitions. So, you know, I can remember, for example, when I was growing up, the evangelicals that I grew up with, sure, they were misogynist. They would claim they were not racist, but would not act on that at all. And so actually, you know, were racist, would support racist policies anyway. On an individual level, they would strive not to be, but, you know, racism is systemic. They were homophobic, but they drew a line at the prosperity gospel. They were very suspicious of Catholics. They were very suspicious of Mormons. All that changed. You now have all these conservative churches working together to pursue common goals in what I like to call bad ecumenism. You know, it's interfaith action for the purpose of domination rather than for the purpose of the common good.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that because we've seen these networks of, and I remember back, and I think it was Justice Alito, that they were trying to confirm, and you had these Justice Sunday events where, you know, thousands mm-hmm. of churches were linked up with the, you know, satellites, and they were, you know, organizing all of these different congregations to get out in the streets and to really push for Alito. I'm pretty sure it was either Alito or Roberts, but to push to get them confirmed. And mm-hmm. I think it was Alito. And it was one of those moments for me to go, wow, they're creating their own little army.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've been floating this hashtag lately on Twitter, Generation Culture Wars, because we used that very militant rhetoric growing up. So people who grew up socialized in Christian school and churches, and that was really pretty much the extent of our social world, or in some cases homeschooled for Christian ideological reasons, we were mobilized to fight these culture wars, to try to take back America for Christ. And so, you know, I was bused to the Life Chain anti-abortion protest from my church at that time in Indianapolis in 1991 when I was 11. My Christian high school used to take juniors and seniors on field trips to hardline Christian right political conventions hosted by a little organization that was then called Citizens Concerned for the Constitution, but it has since rebranded as Advance America. And if you Google Advance America Indiana, you can find its website, and it builds itself as Indiana's premier organization in support of homeschooling, Christian schools, and the family, which are all big code words for theocracy. You know, that was not the kinds of political activities that we were involved with through our Christian school. They were far from neutral civics lessons, far from just saying, trying to instill in us the ideal that living in a democratic society, you should participate in political processes. It was, no, your religious faith dictates that you participate in political processes precisely this way, ultimately to subvert democracy.
And what's interesting is, you know, being from Indiana, we have a vice president who is a state representative and governor of the state of Indiana who pushes those exact policies. And I often say, you know, while Trump is bad, I think long term Pence could be much worse because of that theocratic mindset.
I agree. Pence, you know, he has this sort of milquetoast, maybe slightly charming, Hoosier good old boy demeanor. So many people might think that he's sort of harmless. He certainly manages to come across, when you listen to him speak, as more reasonable, unless you start to pay attention to the content of the things that he says to certain audiences. But he is a very effective culture warrior. He's much more competent than Trump. He knows how to play the game. He knows the networks. So if he does become president because Trump is impeached and removed from office or resigned, I think we are in serious danger because he would work towards these goals in a smoother, slyer way rather than Trump just sort of bumbling around with his bombast and incompetence.
Yeah, I mean, because, look, I think I don't know if Trump did this knowingly or if it was him just being guided by people like Pence. But I look at Betsy DeVos as Secretary of Education, you know, being that next pin and getting many of the culture war kind of curriculum, not just funded, but pushed into the mainstream.
Right. And of course, vouchers and school choice programs have always been about that. I mean, I suppose there are some people who support them on libertarian grounds, but the paradox of libertarianism is that you end up with authoritarianism of a different kind, you know. And many people quite explicitly have been pushing for these policies in order to advance Christian schooling. The most thoroughgoing Christian Reconstructionists, the people who really understand that ideology and themselves identify with that ideology, would like to eliminate public schools altogether. Generally, they see homeschooling as the ideal because in their understanding of God's plan for the world, they think, many of them think, that education belongs to the family, maybe to some extent to the church, maybe the jurisdiction is tied between them, but it doesn't belong to the civil government, in their view.
And to me, that kind of division, those kind of splits destroy this country. When you no longer have a set of mutually shared values and thoughts about democracy, and the you've got chaos, I think.
Right. Well, they'd like to enforce their set of values on everyone. But we saw how well that worked in the Soviet Union with Marxism.
Good point. Let me ask you the other side of this, because what we're seeing in Texas right now is horrible tragedy. And you see these storms getting much worse. And I know several of these, what I would characterize as extreme evangelical types who are absolute climate deniers, and that they believe that these storms are getting worse. And I hate to make it sound ludicrous, but they believe that this is, you know, God punishing us for all of those bad things, and that if we were to do away with gay marriage and we would, you know, persecute the gays and we would, you know, do all of the horrible things that we know that they want to do, all of these things would stop, and that we have no involvement in the climate getting warmer. It's just an angry God.
Sure. It's all under God's control. Which is the ultimate cop-out for perpetuating the status quo. When I've talked to evangelicals in my own family, friends, relatives who voted for Trump, and they want to get off the hook for any kind of culpability in any of the horrible things that he's doing, you know, they'll simply say, well, I had to vote for him because of abortion, and God is in control. So no responsibility. And yes, climate change denial is the most common position among evangelicals. It's also extremely dangerous, not just for America, of course, but for the entire planet. And they have made a lot of these statements about the weather perhaps being signs of divine punishment or impending apocalypse. You don't see that much rhetoric around Hurricane Harvey specifically. And I think that's because it's hitting Texas. If it were hitting a place that was perceived by them as more godless. Yeah. Exactly. That's the comparison point. Really interesting thing happened yesterday on Twitter. I don't know if you noticed, but a lot of people started yelling at Joel Osteen.
As they should have.
Yes, not opening up his megachurch for victims of the flooding. And he, of course, was also raising money through his organization, supposedly to benefit the relief efforts. But, you know, this is a man whose net worth is, I think it's supposed to be around $50 million. Why didn't he just give a substantial chunk of his own money instead of trying to raise more? So I coined this hashtag the other day, Empty the Pews, on Twitter, and it's really been taking off and going viral. And last night, the first thing that would come up, I think it may still be the case this morning, too, when you search for that hashtag on Twitter, is Joel Osteen, because everyone was tweeting it at him, which I thought was pretty wonderful.
No, it is wonderful, but here's the thing. For me, and where I opened up the show with is, you know, we keep hearing the evangelicals, the Christian type, saying, we don't need government. Let the churches do it. Well, here's a moment where the church could have done it. You're talking about an almost 17,000-seat arena that is a church. You couldn't allow a handful of people from the community in. And this is, again, as I said, this was an opportunity for the church to step forward and actually do what the evangelicals have told me that they want to do, and they didn't. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a great point, Rick. And it really is funny, because when I was growing up, again, you know, this was hard right-wing authoritarian evangelicalism, but I heard from the pulpit, you know, God is not Santa Claus. The churches that I grew up in were anti-prosperity gospel. So again, it's an example of how these coalitions have expanded, I think. Now, evangelicals who don't themselves subscribe to the prosperity gospel are not going to criticize Joel Osteen or Paula White. You know, apparently, prosperity gospel charlatans are fine now, even for the people who used to criticize them before. It's all about coming together to assert power and dominance over the rest of America.
Let me ask you this last kind of line of questioning, because, look, I know a lot of people who, you know, they're Christians. They go to church. They believe they believe in, you know, leading a good life, you know, following the Ten Commandments, the Golden Rule, all of that stuff. And yet I don't think they would identify with this. I mean, we're talking about not the majority of Christianity, but a very well-funded, powerful, small segment, no?
Sure, that's right. I mean, I wouldn't call it small, but it is a minority. So if you just want to try to come to a figure from the data that we have, white evangelicals are about 25% of the population. We know that 81% of that group that voted for Donald Trump. Donald Trump's approval rating among them is still at 65%, and that's down from 78% in April. But even the ones who now are saying they don't approve, for the most part, are not doing anything about it. So, you know, say that's about 80% of that 25%, and then you add in the radical traditionalist Catholics, and you add in most of the Mormons. And so I think you come up with a figure somewhere around 25 to 30% of the U.S. population does consist of these radical right-wing Christians. But you also have a much larger percentage of the American population that is opposed to it, and that includes a very large percentage of Christians. So, of course, we do want to recognize that. And as I said with the Empty the Pews campaign, it's not anti-religious. It's a call to follow conscience. If you're sitting in a church that supports Trump and authoritarianism and toxic ideology, and you're wavering, I hoped that if people came together, shared their stories of how they left those kinds of churches, other people might join, that it might embolden people to take a moral stand. So it's a call to leave your toxic church for either another church that is not toxic, or no church at all, as your conscience dictates.
I got to tell you, scary, scary stuff, Chris. And as this continues, we'd love to have you come back and keep us informed of just how crazy things are getting.
Sure, I'm always happy to be on the show, Rick. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much, Chris Stroup. Again, you want to check out his website, fantastic stuff there, chrisstroup.com. We'll get a link at the ricksmithshow.com of how you can get in touch there. Really, I mean, just amazing and scary stuff to me. Quick break, right back, 1-888-520-RICK, 1-888-520-7425. This is the Rick Smith Show.